Good afternoon, everyone. Hot mic. I was 5'7 in high school, and I always got picked last for recess, so I know what it's like to be last. So I'm going to do what I can to talk a little fast to make sure my colleagues get a chance to jump in at the end. So forgive me if I speed through a few of the slides. So this project basically, of course, A, no disclosures. Great. So this is a project that asks two broad questions. Why do we support a proposed public health law intervention? And then why do we adopt the behavior that the law asks of us? So by way of background, I like to think about some relatively new public health law interventions that took different approaches, right? So, of course, we had drunk driving. It took a criminal form of enforcement. We follow the law maybe because we want to, but also because there are severe criminal penalties. Tobacco, the same basic idea. The law forbids you from doing something, and it also sends a message. There's a combination of effects there. But now we have these new frontier, to quote Michelle Mello, interventions that really try to do something different, right? So texting while driving and these calorie counts on the menus and these youth sports concussion laws are not using the criminal law to get us to think about changing our behavior, right? They're using a variety of other softer methods. And so as the laws were being created over time, of course, there are all these different approaches to thinking about why folks will choose to politically support a law, and then the mechanism by which they come to adopt it, or that is, adopt the behavior the law is trying to seek. And as you can see across a variety of fields, there are about a billion different ways one could make the connection between a law and the behavior that it seeks. And today I'd like to talk a bit about political psychology and the role that it might help us utilize in thinking about how these laws will get us to change our minds and do the thing the law wants us to do. So the broader picture, of course, is that a lot of these new public health law interventions, particularly in the TBI space, are based on nudges, right? Here's some information, now go and do the right thing. But for me, when I think about these nudges and the education components of TBI laws, for example, I basically think about two broad things. One, how we communicate about the interventions, and two, how that relates to support for the desired behavior the laws seek to generate. So to get at this, there's one small problem. Some of these interventions face resistance, right? But the resistance isn't equal across all political groups. That is, some groups tend to support these laws more than others, and then they tend to adopt the behavior more rapidly. Whereas other groups, of course, resist the laws at initial proposal and then adamantly resist the behavioral implications of what the law is trying to get them to do. So what should we do about that? So this is my goal, to bring political science to public health lawmaking. It's part of a larger project that's trying to accomplish a few key things, these four bullets. So first, I wanted to identify the factors that cause the public to support an intervention, whatever that intervention might have been. And I thought that maybe if you adjusted the message for certain audiences, or you changed who was providing the message, that might cause someone to support a proposal, and it might cause them to adopt a behavior more rapidly. So the goal, figuring this out, a public opinion survey, and then I wanted to figure out whether or not the proposed TBI interventions in the survey had a response that was aligned with responses to more traditional new frontier interventions. So for those who love samples, I'm happy to talk more in detail about all the nitty-gritty there, but a very, 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 very large survey with lots of demographically important groups represented in the survey. There are a few working hypotheses that, regardless of the policy domain, that most people tend to like public health law interventions, but that if you changed who was proposing the intervention, you might see a response in support for the intervention, particularly in the TBI space. I thought that perhaps some individuals who were more self-interested would have a different response to these interventions. I didn't expect necessarily to see any socio-demographic differences in the politics of law or policy support. And finally, ideological difference in law and policy support over time. So we know about the three tenets that Carrie described, and these, of course, were things that by now people are somewhat familiar with. And so in the survey, I wanted to ask people about basically small tweaks to the three core tenets as a way of connecting what folks were generally accepting with some new, relatively less risky interventions, and then one more radical intervention. And so in the context of asking folks about these interventions, I varied the messenger and the message. And if you're wondering what on earth that means, it's on the next slide. Okay. So what I did basically is I said to folks as part of the survey, I divided them up into groups, and then basically before I gave them the proposal, said one of these groups is proposing these TBI law changes, and to see whether or not the name of the group or the name of the person would cause people to be more likely to politically support the intervention, which would then over time lead them to adopt the behavior that the intervention was seeking. So these were the four interventions, and I asked them to rank them along a traditional Likert scale of strongly support is a 1, strongly opposed is a 7. And I had a general idea that although each of these is in a small way an increment more than the baseline law, there would be some general support. And then as you can see in the bottom right-hand corner, I asked a more loaded question about high-risk sports to see whether or not there was any support for eliminating these sports. And so what I found initially was somewhat surprising, that if you could change the messenger for the intervention, but what you would see is that it wouldn't actually change the political support for the intervention, that regardless of who the group was, there was strong support for example, requiring an annual physical for children, having parents certified in first aid, giving children a substantially more TBI info in an actual training session. But then that last one, of course, eliminating risky sports on a 7-point scale, definitely leaning towards the we don't want to do that. And so if you notice that there's no political significance, there's no statistical significance between group responses depending upon the messenger, suggesting that one key idea I had here is that if you could put the right face in front of a policy, that it would change public support for the policy. And at least initially, that hypothesis was wrong, and I need to figure out if why that might be. So then I wanted to figure out if you change the message, that is the reasoning behind the policy, if you could change support for the policy. So there's this long-winded lead in here where basically the message is, really, this is really, really bad. High-risk sports are really, really bad. And so then the question was, now that you know they're really bad and everyone agrees they're bad, does this change your mind on whether or not you would support eliminating these high-risk sports? And it turns out that by and large, the public said that that additional information wouldn't make any difference. That is, I can educate you more, but by and large, you won't respond any differently. But if you notice on the left-hand side here, these are political subgroups in the survey sample. And what you'll find, of course, on the top is that that information really made no difference for folks who identified as conservatives. And on the very bottom, that folks who were liberals, who may be more tolerant of government intervention, said that the information actually did make a difference. And so along this scale, this got me again thinking about the idea that different people respond to messages differently, they respond to proposed law differently, which might mean they will then internalize the behavioral messages in the law differently as well. Within the demographic groups, there was a strong variance. For example, for the four TBI interventions, people who identified essentially as, we'll say, people of color or not white, supported all of the interventions at a slightly higher basis. Of course, on the bottom there, you'll see the two significant mean gaps in responses. People of color were much more likely to support a more radical intervention for educating students and were much more likely to support eliminating risky sports. By sex, the differences are even starker. That is that women respondents on all four measures were more likely to support the measure than the male respondents, and that difference is significant at the 0.01 level. And similarly, conservatives were more likely across the board to oppose all of these TBI interventions, and these differences were also significant. So what do we do with this information? Well, initially, I'd like to suggest two broad approaches. What if we began to think about differentiating the policies and then satisfying for selling them to the public? What might that look like? So what if there's an idea that, for example, there's one, let's say, education policy, for example, one sheet that has the same information given to everyone? But if people respond to information differently, why can't we differentiate the information on the sheets to particular subgroups? So as a kind of more concrete, as a more concrete example, focusing again on the resistance, let's imagine we have a group of parents reading a TBI info sheet. But these parents actually approach information differently. They think differently about public health law interventions. They think differently about the message. And thus, they will have different responses as to what they'll do with that information when they leave, how far they're going to internalize it. So why couldn't we have 4 or 5 or 6 different ways of thinking about selling TBI information to parents? Maybe parents, for example, who are more likely to support the intervention receive less structure and more advocacy. Maybe folks who you know might be more resistant to the message get primed in a different way than those who are already more likely to support the message. If we can make the policy different, if we can make the education different across groups, that will, I believe, cause all groups to support the policies more rapidly. The second thing, if you think about selling a proposed intervention, what does that look like? Well, in an ideal world, you have a proposed intervention. There's some sort of communication to the public about why that intervention is good. Then there's a filter at the individual level. How do you receive the information and what do you do with it? There are some frameworks that factor in, let's say, 10 or 15 different understandings about how individuals process information. But I like to think of doing it in a more simple fashion. If I told you, for example, that people who were African American were 20 or 30 or 40% more likely to support a particular intervention, what might you do when you began to sell that intervention to the public? Maybe, for example, you might focus on advertising on radio stations that cater to African Americans, and you could sell it differently than you would to, say, a conservative Christian broadcasting network, where you might imagine you'd have more resistance. So the things that you would say to get people to support the law would actually be different and catered to that sub-demographic. That's all for a common goal, getting people to change their behavior through the intervention, particularly when the intervention is a nudge. So to summarize, I think we need to rethink how we message and make arguments about these new public health law interventions. I think that maybe the messenger matters less than the substance of what the intervention is. I think we need to pay more careful attention to the idea that conservatives resist public health law interventions in pretty strong numbers. If they do, why would we expect the same, for example, TBI law that might work well in Connecticut? Why should that law work equally as well in Texas? It might not be enforcement. It might be ideology and resistance coming from the very individual level. It's helpful, of course, to know that non-white respondents support interventions at greater rates than white respondents. Maybe that means when we're targeting groups of color, we can find ways to get them more involved in advocating for policies, and we can spend less time doing so since they're already more likely to support the policy. Similarly, male and female. And then there are two levels to this. First, of course, there's getting political support. And the second part is, now that you have that support, how do you induce the behavior the law is seeking to generate? If the messages aren't tailored, this might cause disparate health outcomes. Here's an easy example. So if you take, for example, in the context of consumer finance, if it turns out that men and women who are buying a home for the first time respond to messages differently and have different demographics, different income levels, different jobs, etc., you would counsel them differently about how they should finance their first home. Similarly, in this space, if people are coming to this issue from a variety of socioeconomic perspectives, number of people in the home, advanced education, even maybe fancier equipment such that actually matters, and so on, if you knew all the information in advance, you probably would tailor the education or other components a bit differently. Next steps. How should interested parties begin to solve the problem of people opposing interventions for political reasons? Two, if that political support is necessary to get the behavioral change and the support is not uniform, maybe that behavioral change is also not uniform. And if that's true, what should law do to fix that? It helps, of course, to remind folks that public support for TBI-related initiatives is strong, absent aggressive direct regulation like banning football. And, of course, the always good conference closer, more research is needed. And that's it. Happy to take one question and then pass it on to my colleagues. Yes. So the picking of Michelle Obama was actually motivated by her very public visibility in healthy eating, right? So I wanted to find a credible national political figure that people thought would actually propose that kind of an intervention. It's fair to say that you could pick someone less visible and potentially less divisive, and you might get a different result. And I think when I do one of these again, I might consider changing that particular messenger to somebody else. Great. Thank you very much. I want to pass it on to my colleagues to make sure we get a chance to move forward. Happy to talk afterwards, of course. And so, next up, Daniel Goldberg.